Welcome to the Agile Strategy Lab podcast, where we explore what it means to view your organization, your company, or your community through the lens of agility, to create a strategy that works in a rapidly changing world. I'm Liz Nilsen, the Associate Director of the Lab at the University of North Alabama. Today's episode is number 14. What a year! 2020 has been nothing like any of us expected a year ago. For most of us, the pandemic has completely upended our lives, both personally and professionally. There are all kinds of things that we just couldn't do this year, or at least not the way that we've always done them before. Vacations, conferences, family reunions, weddings, sporting events, that's just a few. But with all the can'ts, there were some things that we could do. And some of them got more of our attention than in years past. 2020 trends included sourdough bread, knitting, acquiring a pet, puzzles, playing video games. Wait, I did all of those things this year. Here's one more, reading. We may not have been able to leisurely check out the titles at our neighborhood bookstore or the library, but we read more books this year than ever before. The end of the year is traditionally a time for best of lists. And that's what we're doing today. I asked members of the lab to tell me about the best book they read this year. Some of them are new, some have been around for a while. Some are pretty closely related to our work, and others not so much. Have a listen.
It's called Leadership and Self-Deception. But what it's about, it really ties in well with what we do in strategic doing. The way it's written, it's written in a sort of a story fashion, sort of like if you ever read The Goal by Gold Rat. But it's about leadership, and it's about this executive in a company. He's gotten in this new job, and they're teaching him some things about his leadership style and things that could improve it. But it basically starts out with this concept of people being what we call in the box. That is, they don't look at a person as a person, but more as an object. They don't really have respect for that person. As long as you're in the box with somebody, it's hard to get the respect from that person. And as a leader, it really creates a major impediment. And again, it you can be in the box with some people, out of the box with others. And part of the importance of reading a book like that is to sort of self-reflection, to think about relationships that you have, not just at work, not just in your job, but it can be within a marriage, it can be within your friendships, it can be relationships with parents and children. And I think, you know, again, like I said, it really ties back in, you know, what we do in strategic doing, because we, you know, trust is a huge part of effective collaborations. You know, we talk about the three styles of leadership within strategic doing: leading from the front, leading from the back, leading from the side. But it all, you know, hinges on the idea that the people around us will respect us and trust us. And so I think it ties in well, you know, with what we do on that.
I have a recommendation, and it's called Extreme Teaming. It's a book by Amy Edmondson and Jean-Francois Harvey. You may remember Amy Edmondson was the business school professor at Harvard who came up with the idea of psychological safety and the importance of establishing psychological safety within a team in order for a team to learn from each other. And of course, we embed that idea in Rule 1 of strategic doing. When Harvey and Edmondson talk about extreme teaming, what they're talking about is situations where teams have to come together on a temporary basis to address a really complex or wicked challenge, and they have to cross organizational and professional and political boundaries, and there's no hierarchy in place to direct them. So this is very similar to the situations we find ourselves in with strategic doing. a couple of interesting ideas that came out of my reading of this book. Well, one was on shared mental models, and the other was on the notion of an engaging vision. And when I thought about shared mental models, I migrated to the idea of rules 6, 7, and 8 and how we use those three rules on outcomes with measurable characteristics and on Pathfinder projects and on action plans to kind of forge a shared mental model within our teams on where they're going and how they're going to get there. And then when we start talking about an engaging or an energizing vision, I think we address a lot of that in our credo. And so when I think about this book, I look at it from the lens, of course, of strategic doing, and I find some interesting opportunities to reflect and to think about how we solve these challenging problems and in many ways how we're far ahead in practice from where the academics are right now. So it's an interesting read. I think it's pretty fast, and I think you'll enjoy it.
So the book I picked that really kind of impacted me this year is Fanny Flagg's new book, The Wonder Boy of Whistlestop. Fanny Flagg is a delightful author. She's a great storyteller. And what this book does is it takes you on a journey with a number of characters who, in the end, show their interconnections. So whenever I read a book like this, I think about reflect on strategic doing and some of the things I've learned about networking and how when you touch people here, it touches people somewhere else. And that's what this book is full of, these touches. And when she ties it all together as a good storyteller that she is at the end, you just sit back and think, what a better life everyone has because they're connected to each other. And so if you just want to be lost for a few hours in a book that is just delightful, I highly recommend Fanny Flagg's The Wonder Boy of Whistlestop.
One of the books that I've been reading recently is titled Zero to One, Notes on Startups or How to Build the Future by Peter Thiel. Although the book's been around, it was published back in 2014, I'm just getting around to reading it. Interestingly, it was recommended to me by one of my students. Much of the book's about how a founder of a startup business should develop a mindset to help tip the scales of success in her favor. As I begin to think about how the book might be relevant to our agile strategy and strategic doing, there was one chapter that caught my attention, and it was titled The Mechanics of Mafia. And I realize the term mafia has a negative inference to most of us, but being the curious sort, which I am, I had to investigate the origin of the term a little bit. So it turns out in Sicily, an island ruled until the mid-19th century by a long line of foreign invaders, Sicilians banded together in groups to protect themselves and carry out their own justice. In Sicily, the term mafioso, or mafia member, initially had no negative criminal connotation and was used to refer to a person who was suspicious of central authority. Now, I think Peter Thiel used the term mafia to describe the culture that was built when he was at PayPal to describe how tightly knit and strong the relationships were between the employees, that they all felt a sense of belonging to something and that they were committed to challenging authority, basically. The chapter begins with a thought experiment. So it asks, what would the ideal company or group culture look like? That sounds a lot like strategic doing to me. When I think about the answer to this question, I think about the people and the relationships, and they will also need to be excited about working specifically with us. So how do we recruit these co-conspirators, let's call them? I think that starts with the vision from the founder that can answer these questions. Can you explain why your mission is compelling? Now, not just what your mission is, but why is it compelling? Are you truly doing something important that no one else is going to get done? Again, sounds like that connects back to our agile strategy. Can you explain why your company or group is a unique match for the individual you're recruiting personally?
One of the really interesting books that I have read has been a biography about Abigail Adams, who was the wife of our second president, John Adams. This book, which was titled Abigail Adams Alive was written by Woody Holton. And what makes this book so interesting is how Holton chooses to build and tell her story. He uses Adams' own letters that she had written to her children and friends and predominantly her husband John over the years to be the backbone or meat of the book. But then Holton kind of goes back through and helps fill in the gaps between the letters and the years to give the context to the reader as to what was going on in history at that time. So the reader really gets a feel of how Abigail was feeling and kind of gets to be in her head a little bit too. So Holton's underlying argument throughout the whole book is basically how in the midst of the American Revolution and everything that was going on in the fight for independence, Abigail really led a life that stated how women were also in a fight for their own independence and liberation. You get to learn of her relationship with John and how unusual their whole marriage was at the time, given the current social standards. With John's job requiring so much travel, the financial affairs, and even the big decisions that came with raising their children as to where they were going to school and different decisions like that were really left up to Abigail. And Abigail even would ask John's opinion about it as well, but he would still trust her, what she thought, and so would still go with what she had originally thought. And he would even ask her opinion on some business affairs that he was involved with overseas or even just out of town, and would really put a lot of value into what she thought. So that was really the most interesting part of the book to me, was just seeing how their whole relationship unfolded. Holton pieces together a really fascinating life about the challenges and successes that Abigail had in having these responsibilities as a woman at the time and bearing the responsibility alone. And then also just the pressures of being a wife to someone so prominent and all that came along with that. I've really enjoyed getting to learn about Abigail and how brilliant she was. There's so much information in books about the Founding Fathers and the men's side that being able to hear from a different point of view, the wife's perspective and the home life, has been really refreshing. And so I really encourage anyone that's interested in that part of U.S. history to read that book. It'll be well worth your time.
My book of choice for 2020 was The Mother-in-Law by Sally Hepworth. It is set in Australia and is about family dynamics. And as with most books, things are not as they seem. And it just goes to show and really brought home the fact that through the plot, we saw that there were a lot of wicked, complex problems in the past. And had the folks shared their assets and really collaborated, a lot of the tragedy could have been avoided. But it was just really interesting to me about secrets and families and keeping things hidden, and it was just a great read, and I really enjoyed it. It brought some pleasure to my life in what has been a very difficult but fun 2020.
My favorite book this year was a giant one, more than 600 pages. It's The Silk Roads, A New History of the World by Peter Frankopan. I would never have picked this one up on my own, but it was my book group's pick for early in the year, and since I used to spend a lot of time on planes, I got through it. It explores East-West connections through the last, 3,000 years or so. Like I said, it's a big book. Like most people listening to this podcast, I know that my own perspective is unavoidably rooted in my culture, my national identity, and the fact that I'm living in the 21st century rather than, say, the 13th. But I couldn't have told you from the vantage point of history how that came to be or how that perspective might be flawed. I found myself saying, huh, I didn't know that, at least a few times in every chapter. And for me, that's the sign of a good nonfiction book. If you're not ready to take on 650 pages, the good news is this is one you can dip into and still find plenty of food for thought. Spoiler alert. All those stands, what I think of as the global equivalent of what we in the U.S. call flyover country. In other words, that vast territory that we tend to overlook, the stands will take on new meaning for you. Thanks to my lab colleagues who share their favorite reads. You heard from, in order, Doug Barrett, Ed Morrison, Janice Fadden, Mitch Hamm, Hannah Thompson, Mary Marshall Van Sant, and me, Liz Nilsen. Thanks for listening. We hope you found a few new book ideas for your reading list for 2021. You can find a list of all the books on the Agile Strategy Lab blog on our website, which can also tell you more about the lab and how we help organizations address complex challenges. Visit our website at agilestrategylab.org. You can also email us through the website. Just look for the Contact Us button. See you next time.